Hello and welcome to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research, papers, and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson, that I wanted to say thanks to everyone who did send in suggestions for the book I'll be posting as this year's holiday gift for the app purchasers who support the show, including Brother Keith, whose suggestion was awesome, but alas, I could not secure it for digital distribution. So, via PDF on the bonus features for this week will be The Symbolism of Freemasonry by Albert G. Mackey, MD, published in 1882. I hope you all enjoy. And remember, if you don't have the app, you can get it for Apple or Android via the links on our website, wcypodcast.com. I also wanted to mention that on the 14th, coincidentally the same day I'm recording the show, I had a piece that I wrote for the Midnight Freemasons. So I hope you got a chance to check that out. It was somewhat of a Christmas piece, and a reminder that we will be dark for the next 2 weeks, so we'll be back on the 7th of January. Also, in case you missed it, the world is not going to end. You will hear back from me on the 7th of January. This week's first piece is entitled The Plants and Animals of Freemasonry by Brother Nigel D. Brown. There are many reasons why a lodge has a particular name. Many inns or taverns have borne and still bear names which are wholly or partially those of plants and animals. Three of our founding lodges in 1717 were meeting at such houses in London: the Goose and Gridiron, the Apple Tree, and the Rummer and Grapes. It would take too much time and space to list the present-day lodges which have either inherited from such sources or have chosen for themselves a name associated with a plant or animal. Some are Oak, Walnut Tree, Arboretum. On the other hand, Beehive, Lion, Swan. These are but instances, more ancient than the Golden Fleece or Roman Eagle. It should not be forgotten that the eagle is mentioned in craft ritual, all but the Roman Eagle, when discussing the antiquity of Freemason's badge. This derivation comes from the emblem carried by the early kings of Rome, an ivory scepter surmounted by an eagle. This was later incorporated into the banner of the Legion of the Roman Empire. The Golden Fleece of classical mythology was a skin of a wondrous ram guarded by a sleepless dragon. Jason and his Argonauts went after this prize. The journey was long and perilous, but the dauntless heroes persevered, and after a series of adventures, eventually reached their journey's end to win the ultimate prize of their age. This timeless legend, which can be read as an allegory of life, contrasts vividly with the relatively modern order of the Golden Fleece, which was created by Philip the Good, Duke of Burgundy, in 1429. At the time when he was ruling the Netherlands. In 1504, the Spanish Habsburgs took over the country and the order. In 1713, however, it was nearly instituted as an Austrian honor. The Dove and Olive Branch. Of all fauna and flora related to the craft lodge, the dove and its olive branch are probably the most commonly seen. With few exceptions, this is the emblem of the deacons. It is when they are invested with their collars and jewels that the dove bearing an olive branch has its only place in the ritual. The same emblem appears on top of a deacon's wand. The symbolism originates from Holy Scripture, where we read that a dove was released from the ark by Noah, but found no rest for the sole of her foot, and she returned. The second time she came back, and lo, in her mouth was an olive leaf plucked off, while the third time she returned not again unto him. Genesis 8, 8-12. In this way, the dove and its olive branch carry the dual symbolism of the messenger from the dove, as well as purity, peace, and innocence from the olive branch. The fruit of the olive tree is also connected with Masonic ritual, in that its oil was used to pay certain of the workmen employed of the construction of King Solomon's temple. It is also used in the consecration of a new lodge as the symbol of peace and unity, the acacia. There is a good deal of confusion over the shrub associated with the discovery of Hiram's grave, but it is most probable that it would have been cassia and not acacia. The cassia plant, one of the species of Cassia actifolio, was introduced into Europe in the early 18th century, at that time when the ritual was developing. Samuel Pritchard's Masonry Dissected, 1730, and Anderson's 1738 Constitutions both mention cassia rather than acacia in relation to the grave. On the other hand, the available French sources indicate that they had already settled for a thorny branch called acacia. We cannot be precise as to when the change began, But at the Union of 1813, it was settled that acacia should be the word for the ritual use, and eventually acacia was seen no more. It is worth mentioning that acacia, skyal, is the shittah, or plural, shittim, of Exodus 25:10, the wood from which the Ark of the Covenant and the tabernacle were constructed. To some, the acacia is the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and the tree of the serpent. The Egyptians revered the acacia and used it to make funeral wreaths. Legend connects it with other plants to the wood of the cross of Christ, his own cross of thorns and a burning bush. There are many aspects to the symbolism of acacia and with other plants. Rosemary, box, myrtle, and willow. It reflects a belief in resurrection. Phoenix Lodge of Honor and Prudence, in its unique ritual, refers to acacia as signifying innocence or freedom from sin. It appears to bloom and flourish in its place, as if to say, O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? And it thereby symbolizes immortality. A necessity of life, corn with wine and oil was a weekly wage for some of the workmen at King Solomon's temple. In the Holy Land, it would have been more likely that the grain was sorghum or millet, but a wide range of cereals was grown. An ear of corn near to a fall of water is the interpretation of a test word used by the troops of Jephthah to distinguish the Ephraimites after the battle on the banks of the River Jordan. The Hebrew word used to distinguish friend from foe has two meanings, a flood of water and an ear of corn. Corn is used in the ceremony of consecrating a new lodge as an emblem of plenty. Under the Netherlandic constitution, a sheaf of corn stands in the lodge, and seeds of the grain are cast for a different reason. As the ripe corn proves germinal force of the sown seed, so, in the same way, the life of a master mason should bear witness to the strength and supreme principle which he is upholding, enriched with lily work and pomegranates. Both lily work and pomegranates are named in the Bible in descriptions of the pillars outside the temple, in Kings 7 and 2 Chronicles. The pomegranate was widely grown in the Middle East in those days, and it does indeed produce a large number of seeds. There are several referenced in the Bible, and perhaps most interestingly is one in the Old Testament, Exodus 28:33. Here the robes of the ephod were blue, and upon hem of it thou should make pomegranates blue, and of purple, and of scarlet. The most likely flower adapted for the lily work is the Egyptian lotus. This was a sacred plant among Egyptians, which they used to symbolize the river Nile, the giver of life, because their livelihood depended on its annual flooding. It is a water lily with pink flowers that fade to white. Pomegranates and the lotus were commonly used together in Egyptian architectural design, and this style spread to the surrounding nations. It has been suggested that King Solomon's temple was based on a Phoenician design, for these, in turn, had been derived from the Egyptian pattern, Hiram Abiff. The superintendent of casting was a Phoenician through his father's marriage to an Israelite. It is therefore likely that the lily work and pomegranate stemmed from Egypt. The white color of the lilies, however, was probably introduced to reflect the white of religious tradition. White lily work denoting peace seems to be a purely Masonic idea. Industry in the lodge. The jewel of the secretary is two pens in saltire tied by a ribbon. The pens are quills, an example made from the primary wing feathers of a bird. There's probably no deep meaning to be abstracted from this other than to remind us that the secretary uses a pen for recording the work of his lodge. In a Masonic pamphlet written about 1725 and often attributed to Jonathan Swift, bees and a beehive are discussed. By the 17th century, brethren, they were considered an emblem of industry, recommending the practice of that virtue to all created things, from the highest seraph in heaven to the lowest reptile in the dust. The beehive was regularly seen as a Masonic symbol from the middle of the 18th century onwards, on tracing boards, certificates, jewels, glass, and pottery. The Lodge of Emulation, now number 21, adopted it as its emblem more than two centuries ago and still uses it. But at the Union of 1813, it was one of several symbols. Others were the hourglass, the scythe, and the ark, which were abandoned. It remains, however, as an emblem in Scottish craft Freemasonry, and many American rituals preserve explanations that had at one time been current in England. Conclusion. The genuine symbols of our Masonic craft are there for all to see. It is often a good thing for each brother to contemplate them, and having done so, to work out his own interpretations, and this, I have to some extent practiced for myself. We all, of course, learn much from the ritual explanations, and can, if we so desire, turn to the writings of those who have made a particular study of symbolism. My own experience, as I have committed myself to paper, is that our symbols, in providing visual reminders of the lessons learned in Lodge, enable a Freemason to carry those lessons into and so enrich his daily life. Now, I already mentioned our app on the Android and Apple Store, but there is another way to listen, streaming if you want, which is the Stitcher Smart Radio application. Just type in Whence Came You with no spaces when you register for free. And Stitcher supports our show with a $1 donation for every person who does this. It helps offset the hosting costs of the audio files. This week's famous Freemason is the last king of Hawaii. King David Kalakaua was the seventh and last king of Hawaii. He was raised to the sublime degree of Master Mason in Lodge Le Progrès de Oceanie, number 124, on July 28, 1859. He served his worshipful master in 1876, about 2 years after he became king on February 12, 1876. He was active in Masonry right up to the time of his death on January 20, 1891, a day or so after he became a member of the Shrine in San Francisco, after the present Iolani Palace was completed. A Masonic banquet was arranged to coincide with St. John's Day, December 27, 1882. It was the first official banquet held in Iolani Palace. His Majesty used the membership roster of Lodge Le Progrès de Oceanie and Hawaiian Lodge for his guest list in hosting the banquet. It was a gala affair with the music provided by the Royal Hawaiian Band under the direction of its founder and world-renowned conductor Henry Berger. The Hawaiian national anthem, Hawaii Pono'ai, which is still sung today at state and municipal function, was composed jointly by David Kalakaua, who wrote the lyrics, and Professor Henry Berger, who wrote the music. That's it for this week. Remember to follow on Twitter at Whence Came You, and find us on Facebook, Tumblr, Pinterest, Google+, etc. There will be plenty of posts between now and the 7th, so just no audio. Don't forget our friends at the Midnight Freemason. And the original Midnight Freemason, Toddy Creason, has his famous Freemason quote mugs all in stock. Those are great gifts for the Mason in your life. Also, we have our shop as well, which is run through Cafe Press. Links to the shop as well as everything else are on the website, wcypodcast.com. What's in our shop? Well, we have a popular Ringer t-shirt with a logo and Whence Came You on it. Toe hitches with the Masonic Off-Roaders logo. That's right, we did something cool with them, looking to make some rear tire covers soon as well. Anyway, enjoy the book, enjoy your families, enjoy life. Remember, I'll talk to you all next year. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.